Do you think life gets better after the age 60 or 70?
Yes, life gets better after 60 or 70. Age is in some ways like wine. It tastes better with age. Older people are more contented, happier. They enjoy their life more than when they were younger. The physical health gets worse, to be sure, but the mental and social functioning improves.
You know, it's such a hopeful answer that you give to that question, and it's different from the usual story we hear or our ideas about aging.
Yeah.
Why don't we hear the story that you're telling more often?
Yeah, I think the problem is that we are brought up with ageism right from our childhood. So we are taught that old age is all gloom and doom. And the modern society is obsessed with youth, beauty, and physical prowess. These things do go down somewhat with aging, but for an older person, it doesn't matter. You know, we talk about paradise lost and paradise gained. In a way, old age is paradise lost in terms of physical health, but it is also paradise regained because of greater happiness and wisdom.
Why is it that people become happier and more contented as they get older, do you think?
I think it's a change in perception. For example, if a 20-year-old person looks at an 80-year-old in a wheelchair, the 20-year-old says, I don't want to be like that when I get older. I don't want to live that life. But when for the 80-year-old in the wheelchair, he says, oh, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky to be alive. Most of the people I was born with are no longer around. Some of them are in nursing homes. And here I am, I'm feeling good about myself, what I did in my life, and I'm actually quite grateful for what I have.
And you've used MRIs to test the cognitive abilities of older people. What did you look for and what did you find?
Yeah, so there have been a number of studies of MRI and functional MRI. But most of the studies have focused on cognitive deficits in older people.
So poor memory, that kind of thing.
Right. So they focus on finding out why older people do worse on memory, learning, other things compared to younger people. What we are interested in is finding out why some older people do well in spite of being older. So we focus on successful agers, older people who are cognitively functioning similar to younger ones. And what we find is that these successful agers typically are more active physically, cognitively, and socially. They tend to have better structure and function of the brain. For example, the successful agers have more gray matter in certain areas of the brain that are related to learning. Similarly, on functional MRI, we find that in the successful agers, larger areas of the brain kind of light up. That is, there are more activation of neurons and neuronal circuits.
So does that greater activity mentally, cognitively, and physically equal more happiness? Are those people happier generally?
In general, that is true. That people who are more active function better and are happier. Of course, it happens in the other direction also. People who are happier are likely to be more active, and then they will help their brains and bodies stay healthier for a longer time.
I understand that you've also been studying wisdom. How do you go about that?
Yes. Wisdom. So what is wisdom? In a way, we all have an idea about what a wise leader should be or what a wise parent should be. So that person is somebody who knows a lot about life, makes appropriate social decisions, is kind to others, knows herself well, is thoughtful and rational rather than impulsive, tolerates opinions different from hers, but is also decisive when she needs to be. So that's the usual notion we have about a wise person. And interestingly, when we did the literature review on definitions of wisdom that people had used, we found a remarkable similarity that most of these definitions suggest that wisdom is a complex trait that includes several characteristics: general knowledge of life, ability to make appropriate social decisions, knowing yourself, controlling your emotions, being decisive, and also being helpful to others. Things like compassion, empathy, altruism. Some definitions also include spirituality and a sense of humor.
So you reviewed the literature, the past studies that have been done. What is the next step? What are you working on now?
So one thing we did was also, in addition to reviewing the literature, we did a couple of other things to understand what wisdom is. One was we gathered a group of international researchers on wisdom, and we used a technique called Delphi method, or RAND panel method, in which you survey them and get their opinions anonymously. So they are free to change their opinions. So that was one way in which, and thirdly, we looked at wisdom in the Gita. The Gita is kind of the Indian Bible, if you will. It was written several hundred years BC. So we used a mixture of quantitative and qualitative methods to find out how wisdom was defined in the ancient Indian culture. And what is impressive is that the definitions of wisdom across these things, the literature review, this expert consensus, and wisdom in an ancient document, it turns out that the definitions are largely similar, which was really striking. What that meant to us is that it must be biologically based, that it is not purely a cultural definition that changes from one place to another or from one time to another, but it seems to be rooted in the biology, so which means probably in the brain.
And do you have hypotheses about what in the brain is making people wiser, perhaps as they get older?
Yeah. So we have been studying where in the brain the wisdom may be located. And what we did was, again, we did a comprehensive review of the literature, including all the people who had brain injuries, some diseases, brain imaging, genetic and other studies. And what we found was that when you look at the components of wisdom that I described earlier, like compassion, empathy, social decision-making, what we find is that only a few areas of the brain are involved in most of them. So there is something called prefrontal cortex, which is the newest part of the brain in the evolution. And then there's something called amygdala, which is the oldest part of the brain in the evolution. So what we proposed is that wisdom reflects a balance between the oldest and the newest parts of the brain.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I am obviously not a neuroscientist. I associate the amygdala with kind of impulsivity and the frontal lobe more with thinking things through, taking time to consider, that kind of thing. Is that correct?
I think, yeah, you're correct. The one thing to clarify that prefrontal cortex is not just one thing. There are different parts of prefrontal cortex which have somewhat different functions. So there is one part called dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. I compare that with a proverbial father who is strict, disciplinarian, tells the kids what not to do, also tells the kids to study hard, compete with others, be number one. And then there is another part of prefrontal cortex called ventromedial prefrontal cortex. That's like proverbial mother. That part tells people to be kind, generous to others. Don't think about yourself only. Think about helping others. And so those need to be in balance. We can't be too selfish. We can't be too generous. So we have, for the survival of self and species, there needs to be a balance. So that's actually the concept of wisdom, is mainly balance between these various tendencies in order to help oneself as well as others.
So you say that the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala, the relationship between them changes over time. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Now, what I said was that they are related to wisdom, and the balance between these different structures and their function is what constitutes wisdom. And I also said that some components of wisdom increase with age, at least in people who are physically, psychologically, socially active, and who use their experience well.
So how are those parts of the brain related to wisdom?
Right. So, as I said, what happens, that's one part of the brain, this dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, is like proverbial father, right, disciplinarian, etc. The ventromedial prefrontal cortex is like proverbial mother, which is kind, compassionate. Sometimes there's a conflict between the two, so we go to our uncle or aunt, and there is another part called anterior cingulate. And the amygdala is like the proverbial friend on whose shoulder we can always cry and there for support. So wisdom involves balance of these structures. So what happens with age? That was the question. So two things. One is there are normal age-related changes that help improve some components of wisdom. For example, amygdala has been shown to become less responsive to unpleasant situations or stimuli in older people. It continues to have a robust response to pleasant stimuli or situations. But unpleasant situations, the response goes down in older age. So you can relate that to the fact that in older people, there is less regret. There is less memory about things that went wrong. When you are young, you are very sensitive to what other people say. And if 10 people like you and one person doesn't, you will carry that one person who doesn't like you and make you feel bad. When you are older, same thing happens. You'll forget the one person who didn't like you. Think about the other 10 people. So there's a biological basis for that, which is that the amygdala becomes less sensitive to negative emotional stimuli or situations. But there's another fact, which is that not everybody becomes wiser. So people who are active, they have been shown to have larger increases in the volume of the gray matter for matter, or better white matter integrity in their brains, specific areas of the brain. And so they would be able to retain their cognition better, have better overall functioning, including happiness, emotional regulation, and so on.
And how do you think that wisdom, as you're defining it, relates to happiness? Why does being wiser make us happier?
What wisdom does is wisdom involves emotional regulation. In other words, the emotions don't fluctuate a whole lot. It is the exact opposite of teenagers. You know, we know the teenagers, their emotions change from hour to hour, even minute to minute. Whereas a wiser person would have her or his emotions much more under control. So something good happens, they won't become ecstatic, or something bad happens, they won't be totally despair. And at the same time, contentedness is a part of wisdom. So if I do my job well, I get satisfaction from doing that job well. Not necessarily because of the fruit I would get from job well done, not the money I would get, but just because I did the job well. So there is a satisfaction that translates into happiness.
Dr. Jesty, you come from India, and I wonder if having grown up in that context and now living here in the United States gives you a particular perspective on aging and wisdom that some of your peers might not have.
Yes, the answer is definitely. Just to go back a little bit in terms of my research, I've done research in schizophrenia for a number of years, and that too schizophrenia in older people. The usual notion is that people with schizophrenia, as they get older, become worse. But we found that people with schizophrenia, as they got older, they actually started doing better. Their symptoms went down. They became more adherent to their medications and other treatments. Substance abuse went down, and they started actually feeling better. So one question was for me whether this is something that happens in general. So we started studying samples of people in the general community, and we found the same thing, what I call paradox of aging. As people get older, their physical health declines, but their psychological functioning improves, happiness improves. So why was this happening? And coming from India and having grown up reading the Gita, which, as I said, is kind of the Indian Bible, which talks about wisdom in different phases of life, I began wondering whether the improvement in aging that we were observing was related to wisdom. So that definitely happened because of my background and upbringing. And that was one of the reasons why I went back to looking at Gita from an objective perspective of looking at wisdom within that. So definitely my upbringing helped me appreciate the greater happiness in older people, because typically the Oriental cultures respect older people, and so they tend to be happier. But also going back to the concept of wisdom and trying to relate that to wisdom and aging was helpful.
You mentioned also that you did a survey of the Bhagavad Gita and the ideas of wisdom in that ancient text. My understanding is also that in India, there's a tradition of talking about the different roles in different stages of life. Is that a useful way of thinking about wisdom and changes throughout the decades?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes and no. In the ancient Indian literature or way of thinking, there were four stages. The first stage of life for the first 20 years or so was being a student. The next 20 years or so were being a householder, family man, family woman. Then the subsequent 20 years were as a retiree, where you try to help other people. And then came the stage in which one withdrew from the society and left everything, left family, friends, everything. In today's world, I don't think that would be the recommended way of living. In part because those stages are not as distinct now as they were once upon a time. For example, previously the first 20 years of life were considered student life. But now you can go to school at the age of 50.
Yes.
Likewise, as a student, you can do a job to support yourself. people may get married early, or they may decide to stay single for the entire life. So, and plus, this last stage is definitely problematic in today's conceptualization of renunciation of everything. Most of us would want to live an active life. And again, as the baby boomers get older, I think the attitude toward aging is changing. People may retire from their jobs, but they're not retiring from their life. They actually want more of the life in a different way. And I think that is positive.
So if this growing wisdom is has biological underpinnings, like you suggest, are there ways you think that we could learn to be wiser earlier, or do we just have to wait it out?
One thing I should say at the outset is that wisdom and aging are related, but they are not same. So in other words, you can see some younger people who are quite wise, and you also see older people who are not wise. So it is not that age automatically brings wisdom. It often does, mainly because of the experience. When you are young, you don't have that much experience, so your outlook of the world is very limited. As you get older, you have different kinds of experiences. And those who learn from the experience and react to it positively will become wiser. Those who don't won't become wiser, obviously. But it's not just age and experience. There is also some biological explanation that we find that, as I said, people who are more active physically, mentally, socially, their brains function better. Studies have shown that they may have more synapses, more blood vessels in the brain, even more neurons in certain parts of the brain. That has been shown in animals, not necessarily in humans so far. But also, the fact that people who keep their brains and body active can become wiser through improvement in their brain functioning is really a useful concept.
It's also appealing to have an idea about aging that is positive, about a benefit of aging as well.
Yes. I think that's one of the problems I have with the usual notion about aging. Most people think about aging as a disaster. They think about aging in the same way that they think about cancer. It is something to be cured or prevented. We talk about fountain of youth. Instead of that, I mean, we should think about aging as a great resource. Older people are a tremendous resource to the society because many of them are wiser. They have a lot of experience. They know the things to do and not to do. They are more emotionally regulated. They are less susceptible to peer pressure. So there are so many things that older people can bring to the society, including younger generations, that we need to look at aging as a positive phenomenon rather than as something that is all gloom and doom.
Well, I'm curious, in your review of the literature, did you compare different cultures at all? Did you find that maybe in some parts of the world people age more successfully? Are there cultures in which older people are assumed to be a resource for the society that they're part of?
I think the systematic research of the kind one would like is lacking. However, there are studies showing that in Oriental cultures, for example, in Japan, China, India, old age is respected, and older people receive more respect as they get older. So there you find more life satisfaction among the older people. Also, from a different angle, we know that longevity is more common in places like Okinawa, for example, where throughout the life, including old age, people tend to be physically active, mentally active, socially active. They follow better nutritional guidelines. And so both physically successful aging and happiness, you do see more in certain cultures than others.
I want to come back, if I may, just for a moment to your definition of wisdom. And I wonder if part of how you're defining wisdom has to do with shifting one's priorities away from worldly success and more toward community.
I think that's a good point, and yes, I agree with that. It needs a balance. And typically at a younger age, including, say, teenagers, 20s, 30s, the main focus is on oneself. And in a way, that is appropriate because one needs to educate oneself. Then one is going to have a family, then develop the family. You need to be good at your work. So it is appropriate to focus on oneself during the first half of life, if one would. But then comes time when it's the time to give what you got from the others and what you got from the society. So that's the second half of life when you focus more on giving to others. So compassion, empathy, altruism, kindness, those kinds of things are clearly essential for survival of the species.
It's great to hear you talk about this because it makes me think that the message may be take really good care of yourself so you can age really successfully because you're going to be happier than you've ever been.
Right. And I see that in, you know, sports, for example, just to give an example, some of the highly successful athletes, after they retire, they become great coaches because they have learned during their lifetime what works and what doesn't work. And now they're ready to transfer that knowledge to the younger generation. And that's something that older people can do far better than others, which is a mentorship of younger people.
May I ask how old you are?
I just turned 70.
Congratulations on your birthday. Are you happier now than you were, say, 10 or 20 years ago?
Absolutely. I feel that I know myself better, both my limitations and strengths. And I don't pay as much attention to what others might think of me. So there is less peer pressure. For example, the research I'm doing right now on successful aging and wisdom, I've been doing that now for the last 10 years or so. I don't think I would have done that when I was younger, because it is risky to do research in these areas. Most of the hardcore scientific community does not accept entities like that easily.
Why is that?
Because typically we focus on treating diseases and disabilities because they are, from a research perspective, it is easier to do research on, say, cancer or diabetes or depression because we have definitive criteria for them. And also, people want that, understandably. And as we do research, then we can develop treatments and cure or prevent those diseases. So that's all wonderful. But people have difficulty in accepting positive things like successful aging or wisdom. So there is a also because they are somewhat fuzzy concepts. Cancer is not a fuzzy concept, a specific cancer, but talk about successful aging or wisdom, and people say, what is it? Can you define it? And if you can't define it, then that means you can't do research. Which is actually a wrong way of thinking, because we cannot define stress, right? And yet, we now know that stress is a very important element of our health as well as diseases. But 50 years ago, people really didn't think that stress was a subject of real research. But it has changed now. So there is sort of difficulty in accepting these concepts that are not clear. And that's why I would have difficulty myself doing research on these things 10 years ago, not 10 years ago, let's say 25 years ago. I would have worried about my reputation and so on. Now I feel that I'm well established, and if somebody doesn't like that, so be it. But I strongly believe that these are important entities that need research, and now I feel confident enough to continue working on them.
Hmm. And is that also because you feel free now to follow perhaps your interest and passion and not just worldly success or the applause of your peers or the support of your peers?
That's correct. But it's also that I expect that we will be able to show that these are real biological entities. And we will be able to eventually, and I don't mean but the society, the field, the group of scientists, will be able to find ways for enhancing successful aging or for enhancing wisdom.
Well, I look forward to the outcome of those studies.
Yes, me too.